there, and welcome to the Church on the Ridge podcast. Before we head into our talk this week, we want to let you know about some ways you can find out more about us. Head on over to our website, churchontheridge.org, or download our mobile app. Also, feel free to check us out on Facebook and Instagram, where you can find out ways to live out your God-given purpose. We are so excited to share this week's talk with you, so let's go check it out.
Hey, good morning. Next weekend's our marriage retreat. Pete and Mary Kay, who spoke a couple weeks ago, going to be helping lead that, and we're really excited about that opportunity. Sign up. You know, women always ask, you know, why do men play with their wedding ring? And, I'm going to tell you, ladies, right now, they're trying to figure out the combination.
I kind of don't get it, but whatever.
Marriage is tough.
Oh, okay.
Living with a woman is tough. We don't get it. Yes, but last week, if you were here, you know that. How many of you did your homework? How many of your men did their homework last week? Let me see. Round a few of. Yeah, way to go. Put it way up high. Nice job there, Matt. It's the only one. Okay. last week there was a lot of elbows flying. Hey, did you hear that? So, guys, this week, sharpen your elbows. And ladies, I'm just giving you a fair warning. You may want to slide over a little bit, but
if you didn't do your homework, you don't get to.
Yeah. It's
sorry.
A little unfair, but let's review real quick. There are 10 basic needs, foundational needs of man and woman, usually five for a woman, five for a wife, and.
Five for a woman, five for a man.
Five for a man, and a wife, and a. However that works. Yes. So let's review real quick. Conversation.
Openness and honesty.
Being real, being truthful, sharing your feelings, actually opening up your heart. Yes, being a great dad. Whoops. And allowing your presence to be felt in the home with discipline and all those things.
Financial security.
Not just saying, hey, honey, you take care of the finances, or I'll take care of the finances and don't let her in on it, but you're actually giving her a sense of comfort. And her sense that, wow, he has got this thing figured out. He is watching over this. He cares about me in this area. Because this is such an important area for a couple to become one, such an important area for unity. In fact, number one reason couples fight is over money. Yeah, money. So we're going to do a whole talk on it next weekend.
Yeah, and there's some amazing data about the small percentage of couples that actually have honest communication about finances. It's
doesn't happen.
Mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's really weird. Mm-hmm. But we're going to help you out because we're Christ followers. We're godly people. We're going to do it the way the Bible says and not the way the world teaches us.
Yes.
Which, and for most of us, that's been the only teacher we've had.
And affection.
Oh, that's the last one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm supposed to do that for you, affection.
Oh, yeah.
I think I told you my love language is groping. Hers is not.
Acts of service.
And so when I touch her, she's got to know I am touching her out of affection and not because I'm trying to, you know, meet my own needs and let her know how important she is, that she's the most important woman in my life and that she is loved. If she does not feel that, she's like, well, I don't know if he loves me. That's in her head, right? It's going to affect all the other areas. So men, if you are not putting your wife on that pedestal where she belongs and affirming her and building her up and letting her know that you love her, you're going to be missing out on the beauty and the joy what God wants to do.
And we want to encourage you in those three areas that if you're struggling, join the club. What you'll find is that most people struggle in their marriage.
And we say most only because we've not met anybody yet who hasn't. But they may be out there.
Maybe.
And so if you're struggling, welcome to relationships. It's part of it. We're different.
And the second piece is that it's going to take some work to get where you need to be.
That's why we put the homework out there, the action items out there. If you're not willing to take these steps, you're not going to get the results. You're going to go, why is my marriage still cruddy? I keep coming to this church and nothing changes. You haven't put in the work. But if you put in the work, you'll watch. And a year from now, you're going to look back and go, I really like my wife.
Yeah, Charlie and I, as we've said many times, are as opposite as two people can be. But you can't allow that. You can't say, well, this is how I'm wired and this is how you're wired, and so I guess this is as good as it's going to get. This is where the work really comes to light, because now you say, okay, how do I adapt this? How do I modify this so that we can actually have a great relationship?
And it takes work, and we want to encourage mm-hmm. you to do that work. All right, five foundational needs of a man. Real quickly, we're going to just give them to you, and then we're going to dive into them. But number one, respect and admiration. Remember, these are not in any order, all right? Every man has a different order. He may put this one as first, or may put it as last, or whatever. And you may swap. You may go, really, what typically is a woman's need is really my need. It's absolutely appropriate, all right? So respect and admiration, recreational companionship. I want somebody to hang out with. An attractive spouse. I want my wife to be a bomb, right? And,
well, no, it's not quite like that, but yeah, we'll get there.
We'll get there, all right. Domestic support, where there's a conducive, peaceful
peace
kind of home.
Home. Yeah.
And then the last one, sexual fulfillment. And, you know, if you're dating, don't get stuck on number three, an attractive spouse. Like, oh, she's so beautiful, but hey, she, how many guys I've met, oh, man, she's the one, just look at her. Like, have you dived into any of the other areas? No, and you're just starstruck or something. So hopefully you'll take some good notes. And if you're dating and if you're looking for a spouse, here's some things that you can look for. Remember, these are basic needs. These are foundational needs. They're like air and water, not basic, like they're not really that important, just kind of stuff out there. But they are actually the important needs in any relationship and marital relationship with the ones we're talking about today. And it takes sacrifice, as Sandy mentioned. It takes that thing that we stood at the altar and confessed to each other. That awful four-letter word starts with an L and ends with an of. You know, am I going to love this person?
Yeah.
Am I going to love this person the way she needs to be loved? Am I going to sacrifice, lay down my rights so that she can experience and be who God created her to be?
The action word love, not the feeling love.
Yeah, and this was revelation for us. When we understood that Sandy and I were different. Remember, you put our personality profile in any system you want to use. We are polar opposites. We cannot get closer together. The experts told us, don't even date. Well, we're already married. Oh, I'm sorry. You know?
Get help.
Well, get some help, right? Here's some things. But when we laid this thing down and we began to see, and it took me, I think I shared with you guys, 6 months in counseling before I finally figured out that I was part of the problem. And I remember one of the triggers, one of the keys in that process was when the counselor was just frustrated because he wasn't getting through, and I'm like, man, I'm doing everything right. I don't know what her problem is. I know I made some mistakes. You know, made some mistakes. You minimize your own stuff and you maximize the other person's, right? I made a few mistakes, but you know, now I get it. Now I'm doing all this stuff. And he's frustrated, so he turns to Sandy and says, Sandy, can you use a picture word? Can you tell a story about how you feel in your relationship with Charlie? And she goes, well, yeah. And she thought about it for a minute. She goes, well, you know, Charlie, when you go out and you wash the car and you grab the bucket and you get that diaper out and you just start, you know, washing the car and you take care of every area. And I'm going, see, Mr. Counselor, see, I am a good guy. I'm taking care of every area. And you get in between the cracks and the spokes and, man, you get all that brake dust out of there. And man, you wax it down and, man, you take that rag and you wring it out and you throw it in the bucket and you stand back and you just kind of admire the car. And you're just like, and I'm going, see, I do admire her. I'm going to tell. And what did you say?
I said, I'm the rag because I feel used to just make your ministry or your profession look good. That I'm just there to shine you up and then can be tossed aside. And that really was where I was at.
As long as she made me look good, she was valuable to me. But when I was done, just throw in the bucket, put her away until I needed her again.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't call myself a person of faith, a Christ follower. I couldn't call myself a husband when I used another person in that way. I wouldn't use a friend like that, let alone this person I committed my life to. And we began to see that, okay, I've got to make some changes. And I did this religious word. It's called repenting. Where I had to confess and then make some changes. And we began to walk out these practices. How can we serve the other person? And I began to serve her and the needs that we talked about,
yeah.
And began to put them into practice. And so today, we're going to talk about how, ladies, you can serve your husband, how you can meet his needs. The Bible says this, Galatians 5, and I added a couple words here. I'm not adding to the Bible. It's just for clarity. Hopefully it makes sense to you. But Paul wrote to the church in Galatia. He said, my friends, you were chosen. And I wrote in the word chose. And you were chosen to be free. He's saying, look, you didn't have to. Nobody forced you to make a decision to follow Jesus. But nobody forced you to marry your spouse. But you were free to be married. So don't use your freedom. Don't use now that you're married as an excuse to do anything you want. Oh, I got her now. So, hey, I can act like whatever jerk I want to act like. Because, hey, we're married. I don't need to meet his needs. All right, great. Now we're together. No, he says, use it as an opportunity to serve each other with love. Use it as an opportunity to serve each other with love. All the law, the whole Bible. Right? If you're new to church, the Bible can be wrapped up in this one word, this one command, he says, summed up in love others. Obviously, my wife is an other. Your husband is an other. So I need to love her. And then he goes on, he says like this. He says, as much as you love yourself. And, unfortunately, I loved myself a lot. And he says, here's the fear consequences if you don't. But if you keep on acting like a jerk, keep on attacking each other like wild animals.
What a descriptor, right?
Yeah. You're going to destroy your marriage.
Yeah.
You're going to destroy the relationship. And I wish it was a complicated formula so that it could have an excuse, but it's really not complicated. Five basic needs for a man, five basic needs for a woman. You recognize those needs, you sacrificially meet those needs,
right.
And that relationship will prosper and grow. You choose not to, and the person will be trying to suck air where there's no oxygen in the room. And then we begin to meet those needs in illegitimate ways. Someone said sin is simply meeting a legitimate need in an illegitimate way. And it happened for us. And then Paul goes on, he says, live in harmony with one another. Isn't that nice when there's harmony in your home?
Yes, I love it. And in Romans 14:19, it says, make every effort to do what leads to mutual edification. And in marriage, that's that piece of saying, I'm choosing to act on my love for you. I'm going to edify you. And if I'm edifying you and you're edifying me, we're fine. And everything goes great. But it's when we say, I can't edify you because if I do, I'm going to lose something. So counting on God enough and trusting God enough for your own who you are, your own well-being, and then knowing that he's going to give you the grace and the strength to give to someone else.
Yeah, and we've not said this in any of the gatherings. I need to remember to put this in for next week, but your spouse will never be able to meet all of your needs.
Right.
It's impossible. A human being can't do it. They're not designed to do it. The Jesus factor has to be in there, and we'll talk more about that. But let's jump into these things.
Okay.
Five basic needs of a woman, five basic needs of a man. Women, you ready to start writing? Number one, respect and admiration. Respect or admiration.
Right.
It's this idea that you respect him instead of putting him down or disrespecting him. You admire him. Proverbs says this, the integrity and strength of a virtuous wife transforms. Look at that word, transforms. Is your husband kind of discouraged, kind of depressed? It says you can transform him into an honored king. Wow, where he has got confidence, where he's got the sense of self-awareness that, man, I can do anything because my wife is for me. Mm-hmm. Man, my boss just ripped me a new one, but it doesn't matter because my wife tells me how good I am. My boss could tell me what a great job I'm doing and give me a promotion, and I come home and my wife tells me I'm not any good. In fact, it says, but the wife who disgraces her husband weakens his strength, the strength of his identity. I'm no
good. That's a lot of power. And as women, we need to recognize the power that we hold. And it's the power in our words and our attitude.
Absolutely.
And
there's another word for that disgracing. It's corrode. Hebrew word corrode.
I know, and corrode is icky. I mean, that it's dirty when you see a corroded piece of metal. You're like, number one, it doesn't look good. Number two, it's not strong and it's not safe. And so when you think about the power of your words, that they can corrode, That's really significant.
Let me give you three quick ways of which women you can corrode your husband. You can disgrace him. You can pull away from him by disrespecting him. The first one is criticizing comments about what he does and how easy your world is. All right?
How easy his world is compared to ours. And so I think it's easy to fall into that, especially when you have young children. And if you're home and maybe juggling a job as well, and then you're trying to raise the kids and do all the stuff, and then you're like, well, you just go to an office and you don't have to, you can close the door or your cube and you put in some earbuds and then you go out to lunch and all this stuff. And I was lucky to get a crust of a half-eaten
protein bar.
Well, a half-eaten peanut butter and jelly sandwich and some Goldfish crackers. And you just go on. You just live in that.
One of the things she would tell me is, well, you only work one day a week. How hard can your job be?
So that criticism is...
corroding.
Yeah.
Corrodes. They're not valuable at the job.
Secondly, compliment other men in front of your husband. Wow, you know... Say hi to Eric. He's our new neighbor.
Hi, Eric.
Yeah, he's agreed to let you use his P90X videos. You know,
Eric's got those arms that are just kind of coming out of his shirt. And
so, but
I wear baggy clothes, so
you look great. So it is that complimenting other men in front of your husband. It's really a killer for him. And then correct him and put him down in front of others. And this is one that I really, really fell into. As we've talked about before, Charlie in his position as pastor was viewed as the super pastor. He's fantastic. Everybody loves him. He had all this high energy, and he was going to take the world by storm. And I was the dirty rag at home. And I felt like after a little while that I probably needed to communicate that and share with other people that really he's not as great as you think he is. And so I took opportunities to share my opinion, and I shouldn't have. And I do it in front of him, little put downs, always in the guise of a joke, right? Ah, ha, 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 ha.
A bit of sarcasm, you know.
And it was ugly. And it corroded.
Here's what the Bible says. This is the Amplified Version. Ladies, think of these words, right? They're powerful words, and they're actually a command from God for you to begin to implement in your relationship with your man. It says, let the wife see to it that she respects and reverences her husband. Look at this one, that she notices him. You know, you see come up and you ignore him because you're talking to your girlfriends. You're like, oh, it's my husband over here. Regards him, honors him, prefers him, esteems him, and she defers to him, praises him and loves him and admires him exceedingly. The power of affirmation. Let me give you a couple of ways that you can admire and affirm your husband. The first one is by appreciating him. Guys work hard. They work a lot. They go to their work, and many guys enjoy their work. Some do not. And, they're doing it, but much of the time, I hear this more times than I don't. You know, I work hard, I pay the bills, and my wife, like, she doesn't even see it. She doesn't know that this house is here because I'm working to pay the mortgage on this house. And unless I've got to do all this other stuff that's on her list and I never seem to ever complete it, this doesn't even get any points. And
even can be talked about in a negative way. And so this idea of admiring and talking about how you admire. So instead of complaining about the time that he spends at work, and this can be out of balance, I understand that. But instead, think of how to admire that.
Don't be like the woman who saw her husband standing on the scale and he was stuck in his stomach and she goes, that's not going to help. And he looks at her and says, sure it does. Now I can see the numbers.
So we need to thank them. Is congratulate him. Be his biggest fan.
That's a good one, right?
On the other hand, don't treat him like a meal ticket. But instead, you care about how hard he's working.
Gets a little bump at work, man. Wow, that is fantastic. Don't put it down like, oh, well, why didn't they give you more?
Right.
How come he didn't work harder or something?
Acknowledging that he's trying hard and he's working for the family, and it will really be meaningful for him and build him up.
Think about this. She mentioned it, but at work, in my job as a pastor, everyone tells me, what a great job. Oh, you're amazing. Oh, you're incredible. Thank you for being such a good pastor. I come home and it's criticized and I'm not good and you're not doing enough and the whole thing. What is just the natural tendency for me to do?
Stay at work.
and guys, I get it, man. There's this happy hour thing. I'm going to stop off before I get home. If that's happening a lot in your home, it may be because, ladies, again, there's no excuse for aberrant behavior, but there is a tendency to not want to come home because when I get there, I'm just going to get the life sucked out of me anyway and told how not right. very good I am.
So these compliments are so important. So a man's need for affirmation is as strong as a woman's need for communication. So last week, Charlie gave you an action item for men to write down three things that happened in their day so they can talk about it. Women, your action item this week is think of three things that you can talk about and compliment your husband in this week. And then make sure that you do it, that you lead that reconnection time after work with compliments or affirmation.
Even if he knows you're doing it as homework, he will appreciate it.
He will.
Find something to go, wow, you look good today. Wow, you did a great job today. Thank you. Just something that, and he'll go, wow.
And be careful, because if this isn't your pattern, the tendency is to put a little bit of a jab in with it. Remove the jabs.
Number two, recreational companionship. We got married. I got married to my wife so she would be my best friend. I hung out with my buddies. Now I don't have to hang out with my buddies because I've got my partner here. She's going to play video games with me. She's going to go camping with me. She's going to go hang gliding with me. All this stuff. We're going to just do it together. And now I've got my buddy shoulder to shoulder. And we're going to tackle the world together. Right?
Not
hear quite. About the guys that my buddies that went out with their friends and ladies go, hey, let's go shopping. And the guys goes, yeah, I think we're going to go out on the boat. And so the guys took off, got on the boat, ladies went shopping, and it was a bad decision on the guy's part. The weather came in, it was just blowing sideways, the rain was pelting them, and on top of that, the tide went out, and they weren't paying attention, so now they're grounded. They get out of the boat, they're muck deep in yuck and trying to push the boat out and get hit by rain. And one guy's buddy turns to him and says, man, this is better than shopping.
So Ecclesiastes 9:9 says, enjoy life with your wife.
Enjoy life with your wife. Again, I got this now, my best friend.
Yes, and Colossians 3:18 says, wives, adapt yourself to your husbands. And what we find is in the dating world, you did things together. You went on dates. You did fun activities together. And then if you talk to couples after they get married, they do chores together, and the fun that they have is separate. So, hey, why don't you go out with your buddies and have that, go play golf. And, he's like, oh, well, she had
have
me
girl
go.
Night. Yeah.
And so our fun is, again, separate. And then when we come together, all we're doing is chores. And so you have to make that time, create that time to find something you want to do together, recreational companionship, have that shoulder-to-shoulder time. Again, women, we want this face-to-face communication, and it makes these guys just kind of almost shiver thinking about 15 hours a week, like we talked about, of meaningful communication. But what you can do is you can have a lot of that communication shoulder to shoulder while you're doing something fun together.
And we clarify that. Conversation is not the word, it's engagement. Meaningful engagement together.
Right.
And it's conversation, it's recreational activity, it's being together meaningfully, quality time. If all you're doing when you're together is chores, and then when you're with your buddies, you're having fun, and when you're with your girlfriends, you're having fun, what's going to take place? Right? We see it all the time. Guy's doing his thing, and some girl enjoys whatever. Let's say it's hunting, and some gal enjoys hunting. She's all camoed up, and she's enjoying hunting, and she's going, wow, you're the best hunter. I can't believe you love hunting. Oh, yeah, I love it. And now they're hanging out together enjoying hunting. His wife doesn't enjoy hunting, but she sure does. And you can fill in the blanks. And it happens all the time in every area. If a guy's not talking to his wife, some guy at work's going to talk to her and tell her how wonderful she is. She's going to feel good about that, and this thing begins to deteriorate.
And so you might say, but we don't enjoy the same things.
We don't.
I know.
We didn't,
but we've learned. And so one thing that we did is we went ahead and took, you can do like recreation activity surveys. They're online everywhere. And do them separately and just rate them, you know, 1 through 10, 1 through 5, whatever the scale is, and go through. And maybe you're not going to get your 10, but find out, do we have a mutual 7 that we can start doing together? Is there something, a commonality here on our two surveys where we can build and learn to have some fun together?
Yeah.
Charlie didn't grow up cooking or learning anything in the kitchen. I love to cook. And just because of working evening shifts and stuff when the kids were little, he got thrown into this whole cooking role. Well, he discovered that he kind of likes cooking. And now we like to cook together. And so...
Sandy, you know, I'm never going to get her hang gliding. The closest I could get her was zip lining, you know? But I'm not going to get her to climb out Rainier, but you know what? She will go on hikes. As much as I make fun of the hiking boots, the whole thing, she will go on hikes with me. We'll get out in nature.
Shoes.
Yeah, in her tennis shoes, the whole thing. But again, we can settle on a 6 or a 7 where we're doing it together.
It becomes a 10.
It's a 10 because we are now connected. We're enjoying life together. And it's usually not about the thing, right? There's some stuff. If you're a guy like me, a lot of adrenaline rush, that's sure. But I would much rather have a great relationship with my wife than have an adrenaline rush being divorced and my kids having to be raised in a yucky home.
So your action item this week is find an activity that you like to do together. Think back to when you were dating and do it. Take the time and actually do it.
At the
do
very
something
least,
fun.
Take the survey.
Yeah.
Just go through and just rate the stuff and come together and have that conversation. Number three, you ready for this one? You win. You win.
You're sweet.
Attractive spouse. She's beautiful.
And again, we need to go back to that dating time. When we were dating, I guarantee you, ladies, you put yourself together. You thought about what outfit you were going to wear. You did your hair. You put on some makeup. And then you went out and had this recreation. I mean, that was two right there that potentially might have switched since you've been married. And if your husband only sees you getting ready for other people, but not for him, it's a bit of a
It's a sign of disrespect. Wow, she loves everybody else. She'll do this for everybody else, but she won't do it for me.
You know?
The Bible says, 1 Corinthians 6, proof text this, it says, use every part of your body to give glory to God.
And pleasing your husband is glorifying to God. So it's not like you need to look model ready, but if you say, hey, let's go get some pizza tonight or whatever. And the fact that you say, okay, great, I'm going to throw on some clean jeans and a nice t-shirt and comb my hair and put on a little bit of makeup. He'll go, whoa, maybe you haven't done that for a while for him. And you did that just for him.
And doing the best with what you have. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, time takes over, gravity takes over.
Absolutely.
You know, I get it.
Yes.
And
don't rub it in. But be confident with what you have. You are what you are. You're the age that you are. You're whatever you are is what you are. So just be the best that you are.
Whether you like it or not, ladies, God wired men differently, and he wired them visually. We are visual creatures, and when we see some of our wives, and we desire our wives to be beautiful, we want to be proud of them. That confidence that you have when you're not, oh, I don't feel good about myself, oh, I hate the way I look, oh, whatever. So then you just kind of walk around with that dejected kind of feeling. It affects him. And you go, well, maybe I'm not in the shape I was when I got married. Maybe I'm not. I don't have that. Well,
but I'm going to do the best that I have.
Yes, and you carry that confidence. Remember the girl in high school or college who thought she was all that? And you're like, what do the guys see in her? She's not that pretty. It was her confidence. It's her confidence. Let me tell you a secret, ladies. Your man wants to be proud of you. Mm-hmm. He wants to take you out, and you're looking confident in your best. Here's what he wants. He wants other guys to look at you. Don't touch. But look at you and go, how did that idiot get her? Wow.
First,
he must be rich or something, you know?
Yeah.
And then we walk around, we'll put our chest out. We're all proud. We want you to put your chest out.
No, don't say that.
Can I read?
First Samuel 16:7 says, "Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart."
They're laughing because I'm right.
And okay, great, woo! And
ladies will say, "Oh man, men are so shallow. Why can't they just see my heart and how pretty I am on the inside?"
But they're not God. And so God, the Bible's pretty clear here. Man looks on the outward appearance. So men are wired visually. Isn't that interesting? And we can't just throw that away and say that's so shallow, but want him to respect that we need financial security.
Yeah, what, are you all about my money? Really? That's why you married me, so you could have my money? How shallow can you be? I thought you married me for me.
Right. Right? So.
All right, so action item this week. Ask your husband, what is the favorite outfit you can wear? And my wife made me add, in public.
And then wear it. Number four, domestic support.
Little Vicky secrets in there. Number four, what? Let's move on.
Domestic support. Proverbs 17:1 says, "Better a dry crust with peace and quiet than a house full of feasting with strife."
You guys understand that? If there is, you could have all the money in the world, you could have the best cars in the world, you could have the best everything in the world, but if you're in disharmony, is that first verse said? If you're in disharmony, man, just give me a piece of crusty old bread. I'd rather have that in a house that's peaceful, a house that's got some serenity to it than one that is just always, it's just not put together. Titus says this, "Encourage the younger women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible and pure," and check this out, "to manage their household." I understand culturally there's a context for this. We'll talk about that. It says, but to be kind and submit themselves to their husbands. Whether this is cultural or not, men have this desire for peace and quiet in their home. In their workplace, it is chaotic. Man, everybody wants a piece of them. Everybody's badgering for something. Yeah, I need this yesterday. And, you know, get this done. And they're pulling. I get it, ladies. Go through that too. But this is how men are wired. And when they come home, they just want to be able to go,
I'm home,
and nobody wants a piece of me. And it's not, okay, here, take the kid. He filled the shorts just before you get him. Here's your prize. Okay, it's my child. I'm not going to, like, whatever, but. Oh.
And there's balance here, but it's the approach. And it's the allowing for that time of peace and quiet. And you have to talk about it. This is a great thing to talk about in your relationship. How would this look? How would I give you this? Like for now in the new season that we're at, without kids in the home, we'll usually talk my entire commute home. And so
I get the conversation in.
And Charlie oftentimes now is prepping dinner during that time while he's talking to me.
Our commutes are a little different. I mean, I was really bummed when they put in that new light. It's just, it affects me, but...
Yeah, your 1 mile commute. So, it's great. It's perfect. It's so great that he lives so close because we're not both commuting. And so he's there, we talk, and then he usually is making dinner, and then I enjoy cleaning up. It's just something I enjoy. And
There's an old book, it's called Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Right.
It's been out for a long time now, but John Gray talks about this idea of men and women being different. Women, I don't know how you do it, but you cannot shut your brain off. You're thinking about stuff all the time. It's like the illustration is like spaghetti. It's just all this stuff going on. It's like, how in the world? But it's there. Men are not like that, ladies. We are not. We are compartmentalized. We have a box that's called the work box. And when I get to work, I open that box and I pull out the work, and that's what I'm focused on. When I go home, I put it back in the box and I shut that box and I open the commute box and then I get home. And I have this box, and Sandy would ask me, I'm just sitting there, and she goes, what are you thinking about? Guys, what will I say?
Nothing.
Ladies, did you hear that? It's true. We have a box called our nothing box, and there ain't nothing in it. And that's what we're doing at that moment. We are not thinking about a thing, and you think we're holding something in or we're hiding something. No, we are detoxing. We are shutting down. We're allowing the serenity, the peace of our home just to allow us to re-energize.
And so that's, that time, then I'll clean up and Charlie gets to go to his nothing box. And that's okay. And that's what he needs. And so I have to meet that need. So our action item is ask your spouse, how could you help support that need? and not resent it or not try to push through it because it's real.
Yeah, you know, there's crazy dishes everywhere and laundry piling up and stuff. It's just,
and number five.
Oh, wow, we get to number five.
Yeah.
All right, this one here, if we ask 100 guys, 80 of them would say this is the number one. All right, sexual fulfillment. And
a lot of women don't want to believe it. In our years, we've met so many women in marriages when we talk about this, and it's really sad when it's like, wow, it's been months or even years since there's been any sexual intimacy in the home. And this is a real need.
Yeah, remember, guys, ladies, it's like air and water, right?
Yeah.
If we can't get fresh water, we'll drink polluted water. If we can't get fresh air, we'll drink polluted air.
Yeah.
And these needs will be met, maybe inappropriately, but they will be met. And the greatest place for it is the context of marriage. If you're dating, you're going to be outside of that. This would not be for you. You need to hold off on that until you come to that place where you're going, hey, I'm going to make a commitment here. Here's what Proverbs 5 says. As a loving hind and a graceful doe. Isn't this cool? A loving hind, a graceful doe. We see him always here out here in the east side where we're at. And then he switches. He says, let her breasts satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love. This idea that, man, I'm enthralled with her and that she allows me to be enthralled with her and I get excited about these kinds of things.
And we have to respect the always there. And just that this need is probably bigger than your husband is even saying to you.
Because it's such a personal area, we won't talk about it. We're afraid to talk about it because the rejection in this area is so strong.
Yeah.
When you say no, it just, oh, she doesn't want me. She doesn't think I'm good enough. Nobody else thinks I'm good enough either. Man, my boss doesn't think I'm good enough. People at work, not good enough. And now she doesn't. And it's not because of this over-rev sex drive. In fact, they did some studies on it. I've got a chart here of the men's sex drive. And I didn't put the numbers on the graduations on the y-axis, but we put time over there. You can fill in whatever you want, whatever you think your sex drive is, guys. But it peaks at about 20 years old. Men's sex drive peaks about 20. And then through the 20s, it doesn't really drop much. And then through the 30s, it tries to, it really doesn't drop much there either. Through the 40s, it's still holding strong. 50s. And then 60, you see a little drop there. And then nobody knows when this next one happens. Nobody knows when this next one, but it just kind of falls off. But we have discovered why. We have discovered the why behind it. Look at this.
And the actual statistics on this and data is real and maybe a little bit shocking, but it talks about men in their 20s needing sexual fulfillment 5 to 7 times a week.
I don't see any of the women writing.
30s, 4 to 6, in their 40s, 3 to 5, in their 50s, 2 to 4. So you can see where this leading. This is a need that people don't talk about and honestly about and is often an unmet need.
The Bible addresses this very specifically. In 1 Corinthians 7, Paul's talking about a husband and his wife marital relationship and specifically their sexual relationship. And he says this, a man should fulfill his duty as a husband and a woman should fulfill her duty as a wife. And each other should satisfy the other's needs.
It actually means more than just fulfilling. It means that you are desiring to have a relationship, an intimate relationship with him.
He wants to be desired. He wants you to want him, like the old 70s song. It's true. If it's just simply, okay, fine, just get it over with, that doesn't meet the need, all right? It's your desire for him. So let's close. We could talk about this stuff for a long time. Thank you for being patient with us. Last week, your action item for this week, just practice. Just practice
pretty
this one,
easy.
Right? Here's your homework. Ladies, give the list to your husband. Say, here's 5 needs. Pick 2 of them. Don't pick all 5. I got some action items, but pick 2 of them that you would like me to work on this week and see what happens. And guys, if you didn't do your homework last week, there should be no reason why you should expect your wife to do her homework this week. I know she can, but if you didn't do your homework, let's step it up. Your relationship may be feeling dead. They feel like it's like that line just went off the charts and there's not much there and you're trying to figure out if there's going to be any hope. I can tell you personally, as we've shared through this series, when I finally came to that place and I went to God and I said, Lord, I'm sorry. I need you. I cannot do this on my own. As good as I am, as strong as I think I am, I've blown it. And I've got all this garbage in my wake, a pile of dirty rags stacked up. God, is there any grace for me? And I tell you what happened. My wife said, hey, I'll tap into that same grace, that same power. And when we began to allow Christ to invade our life, stop trying to do it on our own, thinking that we were big enough, strong enough, smart enough, He began to transform us. And now 35 years into it, we have an awesome marriage. God will forgive you. God will give you power to do what you can't do if you allow His reckless love to invade your life.